Good afternoon and welcome to this month's Member Spotlight for the Professional Writers Alliance. I'm Managing Editor Jen Adams. Today I'm sitting down with fellow PWA member John Stoltzfus to talk with you about growing your writing career using spec challenges. These unique writing challenges have been a springboard to a great, just in some cases astronomical writing income for many PWA members. In John's case, it's allowed him to go from having virtually no writing career to speak of just a few years ago to being one of the financial newsletter industry's most in-demand freelancers today. He's partnering up with some of the biggest names in the financial space and earning a solid six-figure income from his writing. So I'm super pleased that he was able to make time for us in his busy schedule. Happy to have you with us, John.
Thanks, Jen. It's great to be here and to share whatever I can with the other PWA members.
Great. So in our time today, as we talked about before, I was hoping that you'd be able to share with our members your experiences, not just winning a spec challenge, you know, that first step, but then turning those initial winning moments into sustainable success. So let's start at the very beginning. Kind of as background for the group, can you share why you decided to dive into writing with spec challenges as your launch point?
Sure. I think there's the short answer and the long answer. The short answer, like most freelancers, is I just simply didn't have any samples or portfolio to share with people at the time. As I came out of being an engineer, and I still am an engineer as part of my day job, I had done writing over the years. I had done business development type of writing, including case studies and things like that. But even those were typically proprietary in nature and things that I couldn't share. So even transitioning what writing I had done, I couldn't take those and add those to a portfolio. And so, you know, the spec challenges and writing things on spec for customers even outside of the challenges that AWAI offers gave me an opportunity to write for a product, right for a specific purpose, and get that in front of the potential marketers without needing to rely on a portfolio that just didn't exist.
Well, and that is great, especially because I know so many people say, you know, what I really need are samples, and I just don't have samples. And you're like, well, shortcut around that problem. So what was it like when you won your very first spec challenge?
It was actually both. It was both a relief, a joy, but it was also a little bit frustrating at the time. I know you've heard this story before, but you know the first specs I did were at boot camp in 2014, and I actually submitted seven different spec challenges. And of course, you know, some of them the winners were announced at the boot camp awards lunch, and some of them were later. And of course, when I first left boot camp, you know, my name hadn't been announced. I left there thinking, oh, I haven't won anything. 0-7, all this work for nothing. And so initially I was frustrated. And what I did was I made sure to follow up on conversations that I had had there with people. You know, one thing to remember is when you submit these, you can't just walk away and wait for them to come back to you. You treat them like anyone else that you're trying to bring into your marketing business and bring in as a client, and you nurture them. And so, you know, in this case, my first spec win was with Eagle Financial, and I had struck up a conversation with Wayne Ellis, their copy chief there, and I continued that conversation over the next, you know, several weeks. And really, it was about 6 months later when he finally came back to me and said, hey, you know, we've talked internally. We liked your spec, what you wrote for us, and the fact that you have kept in touch with us and you know, I've been professional all along the way, you know, so we're going to give you the win for this and would like you to start a project. And, you know, at that point in time, it was a huge relief. It was very satisfying and just kind of went from there.
Nice. Well, and so once you started working with Eagle, you know, how did things move from that first project into a more recurring relationship?
Yeah, so the first project with them, it was really, first the spec was just a headline and lead. So it was for a particular product in their pipeline, one of their back-end subscription services. And the headline and lead was, you know, just the first three pages or so of an idea. And so initially I was thinking, oh, this is the project I'm going to be working on. So as we got on the phone and talked about it, you know, Wayne said, well, you know, we were thinking about doing that one, but now we're going to actually have you look at a different newsletter. And so starting it off, I mean, obviously the first thing was we had to negotiate a contract, which, you know, this is where everyone, you know, gets hung up, especially in their first projects, is what do you do? Different writers have different opinions on this. Some people like to just throw out a number and see what happens. I'll be honest. I was completely honest with Wayne. I said, look, you know I'm a green copywriter. I'm brand new at this. I'm just learning, and I'll still be learning a while from now. So, you know, I know based on the industry what the averages are for, you know, established writers. I know I don't deserve anything near that yet. So how about we pick a number that, you know, is a reflection of the amount of time that I will probably spend on this? And, you know, I threw out a number. He came back a little bit, said, well, you know, my publisher wants to go a little lower than that. So, you know, eventually we haggled a little bit, settled on a number, said, okay, great. We've got the contract in place now. We've got a number. This was for a long-form promotion. It was for the email lists to go out with it, the order page, some of the basic collateral that goes with it. And after that, it was, okay, well, they have what they call copy kits, which basically just an assembly of information, the guru's bio, information about the product. In this case, it's financial newsletters, so it included, you know, the track record, past promotions that had done well or not done well, and a whole collection of information that I could review. And we basically laid out a process that said, okay, we're going to give you 2 weeks to review this information, come back with some ideas for different angles to try with this. You know, 2 weeks later we would come back, we would do that, and then we kind of worked through the whole process of laying out a schedule. And that first project lasted, I think, from start to finish, it was a little more than 3 months. And, of course, there were a lot of iterations on the copy, it being my first one. That promotion actually went out, became the control for them for that product, which means it beat their existing promotion. And based on those results, you know, Wayne came back and said, hey, you know, this was great. It did a good job the first time through. You know, we'd like to try another one. You know, let's see how you do with the second one. So we picked a different product, something that was going to have a different slant to it, tried another one. And basically what we did was we kind of went through that process for the first 6 months or so, 6 to 8 months, getting through a couple promotions, me getting comfortable with them and their products, them getting comfortable with me, how I worked, how I delivered the products, and just communicated in general. And from there, you know, we entered the conversation of, okay, let's look at a recurring relationship of a retainer. You know, how many promotions do you think you'd want me to write over the next year? And, you know, where do you think we are in a dollar value for that? And we kind of just laid out the structure of the deal from there. So, of course, it was built on some of that initial success I had with the first promotion, but a big part of it was just proving to them that, you know, I could speak in the right language, that I could, you know, create the right connection with the prospect, and really just follow the basics of putting together a financial promotion.
Yeah, well, and I think you've touched on it as well, you know, putting in the effort to get to know them as a company and reading the materials and asking the questions. I know sometimes newer writers looking at the financial space are like, well, but I don't know anything. It's like, you know, companies don't always expect you to know their experts, to know all their products, to know their whole history. It's like, but they do expect you to read up on it.
Exactly. You have to demonstrate that you've either done the homework or that you're willing to do the homework. You know, even at the beginning there, had I come back 2 weeks later and said, well, you know, I haven't really done any research into, you know, Guru's name, and I haven't actually opened those back issues yet that you gave me, but I will, you know, that would have demonstrated just a lack of focus and a lack of desire to really move forward. All of the publishers in my experience now understand that you're not going to have everything, and you're not tied into every single product that's out there, even if you're a subscriber to one newsletter or multiple newsletters. And so you'll get starter information like that from everyone, and from there, you know, you try to fill in the blanks.
Yeah. Well, and if they don't have that information, they recognize that they have a gap, and they'll talk with you about either how to work around it or how they're working to fix it. And yeah.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
So then how were you able to use your early track record and kind of the relationship that you were building with Eagle to get clients from other publishers and kind of across the financial space?
So I probably have to admit that I cheated a little bit in that I was able to leverage each of my clients to get other clients. in that, you know, in the case of Eagle, about 5 months into that relationship, or 4 months in, they said, hey, Clayton Makepeace is going to be hosting a financial copywriting event, you know, focusing on this, and, you know, and Wayne said, hey, I'm going to be there. We're allowed to take a writer along, you know, we'd like to, you know, have you come along and you know, learn from him and everyone else in the room and, you know, use that as part of your development. Great. I'll take that opportunity and go there with you. And at that event, they had a little mini job fair, and I met who became my second client. You know, and then, you know, at another event the next year, at the last AWAI event, you know, which that attendance was paid for by one of my current clients, I met, you know, yet another client. So I've constantly met new clients and made connections at live events, almost all of which have been paid for by my existing clients. So that's what I mean by I cheated a little bit. But obviously part of it, too, is just being able to gradually build up that portfolio, you know, with examples and with things that I could add to my portfolio. I made sure that I asked my existing clients, you know, can I use this or can I use screenshots of this to add to my portfolio, to share with other people. You know, you want to make sure you get permission from any client about doing that stuff before you do it. And once I had that stuff, then I had information to share with others. You know, I also had a couple other angles that I was able to use in that I had taken the financial copywriting program through AWIAI as well, and as part of that I had an opportunity to work with Paul Hollingshead on a promotion. And he actually helped me on that first promotion I did with Eagle a little bit. And it was the second promotion I believe I did with Eagle. And, you know, based on the writing that he saw from me, you know, he was willing to start, you know, sharing my name with other people in the industry, which helped me to make contacts. And in addition, you know, I've talked about this at boot camp. You know, one of those seven specs that I lost that first year, you know, I maintained a good relationship with that copy chief. He eventually went to one of the Agora division's dent research, and when they were looking for new copywriters, you know, he threw my name out because I had nurtured that relationship, even though I had never worked a day for him yet. And so, you know, that again is just the power of kind of continuing to build relationships and build contacts in the industry while you're working towards, you know, whatever level of success you want to have.
Yes, well, and also, you know, not abandoning a loss as a lost cause. Some of that copy really does have a way of circling around. So.
It does, and you see over and over again from other PWA and AWAI members, you know, someone will say, oh, well, I first reached out to this client, you know, 6 months ago, 3 months ago, a year ago, and they weren't ready at that time. And you know, either, you know, sometimes the client will come back to you, but I think it's, you know, far more often where you reach out periodically and finally you hit them at the right time and right place, you know, whether it's because of their budget or something that's happening with their business. And so you're right. I mean, just because you have a loss at a certain point in time, unless they tell you to go away and not call them again, you want to continue to try to nurture that relationship. You want to respect their time. You don't want to bug them. You know, again, one phrase I used a lot with people when I first started was, you know, hey, I'm just following up on the status of this spec assignment and whether you've had time to, you know, evaluate these or not. You know, I don't want to be a burden on you. I realize you've got a lot of copy to get out the door. You know, I'm just looking to be an asset. So, you know, if you have anything willing to share or if you want to let me know how long it'll take, just let me know. And so I always tried to show that I was going to be respectful of their time, but I was going to keep reaching out to them until they told me otherwise.
Yes. Well, and it definitely has paid off for you. And, you know, can you talk us through some of the stuff that you're working on right now, some of your campaigns and your partnerships that you've developed?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So for the most part, I've moved on from Eagle Financial, and that was kind of a mutual decision. And even my second client now, I've started doing less work with, and primarily that's because I'm working more with Dent Research, who I mentioned a little bit earlier, again, Agora division. And for them, for the most part, I'm producing long-form promotions and all the collateral. So what that means is when I get a project, I will write the full promotion, whether that's just something for an HTML page or whether it's actually going to be produced into a video sales letter. But then I also write all the collateral associated with that. So, for example, I had a campaign that went out about 6 weeks ago now. So it ended up being about a 30 to 35 page promotion. We launched it as a webinar, as a live video sales letter. So we had a 7-day email campaign to build a hot list of people signing up for the webinar. I wrote all 7 of those. We had 6 days of fulfillment emails, basically things that we then sent the people who signed up in order to kind of keep them coming along, you know, the process until the day of the webinar arrived. One of those was old material that we were able to recycle. The other 5, I wrote those as well. I wrote the order page copy. I wrote upsell and downsell copy. I wrote emails and space ads then that went out after the webinar launched, when we wanted to have people keep coming back to that. So in that case, you know, I didn't just write the long form. I wrote all the associated material as well. And some clients out there will have you do that. Some won't. Some will give you the option. I know some writers who basically say, I only write the long form. You have someone else, you know, junior copywriters, whoever, write the short form stuff. My personal preference is to write it all. So that's the relationship I've built with them, because I can make sure that I've got the right connections from one piece of copy to the next to make sure that each piece resonates with the prospect as I pull them through one piece of copy to the other. And
right.
So that's the way I work with them, is really writing.
I was going to say, who knows the copy better than you? You wrote it all. So.
Exactly.
You know, it can.
And not only that, but
it faster.
Yes, and not only that, but in a lot of cases, you can pull from your copy that you've written for the long form and leverage pieces of it for the webinar series. And so you're not necessarily writing a lot of new copy. You're just repurposing it. And you're finding a way to cast it in a slightly different light to use as a piece of copy to drive them to the webinar or drive them to the sales page or wherever they're going.
Yes. Well, and I think that whole list of everything that you talked about doing, I had someone ask me, you know, how can people only work on 3 or 4 promotions a year? And I'm like, well, there's a lot that goes into a campaign sometimes.
Yeah, there is.
And, you know, financial...
Well, and not only a lot that goes on, but you still have all of the people, you know, in the marketing department and in the legal department and your copy chief and anyone else who's going to look, and the guru himself, you know, anyone else who's going to review that copy gets to look at it and chime in and say, well, yeah, I don't like this part, or I don't like that angle we took. And so, you know, it's also the fact that you're typically going through several revisions of not only the long-form copy, but sometimes the short-form as well. And not only that, but the project doesn't end when it launches, because, you know, if you're treating this as a marketer and not just a copywriter, you want to stay embedded in how this is doing and how you can continue to make it better, because the more sales you get, especially in something like financial where you get royalties based on sales, you know, the better off you're going to do with it. So, you know, when I send them that last, you know, file with a whole bunch of email lists, I'm not done. I'm not done until, you know, weeks and weeks into the campaign, when I'm going, okay, did these emails work? If not, do we have any indication why? Do you want some new emails? Or, hey, I saw this in the news today. I think this would make a great angle for an email lift. How about I give you a new email and we can try going out again? And so you're constantly trying to figure out, what can I do to improve this, even if it's a new headline sometimes.
Yes, new headlines, new material, new formats.
Yep.
You know, if the campaign is winning, you know, it's like, great, it won as a letter. Let's make it a VSL. Let's make it all these different kinds of things. Let's put it in the mail. And so one little project, one little spec win, and the next thing you know, you're like, oh, I'm booked out for 6 months. And it all comes back to that. So.
Yeah, it does.
Very cool. Well, and one thing to kind of change it up a bit, you know, as we're talking about kind of the intensity of some of the financial campaigns that you've worked on and how many pieces go into it, I know that one of the things that always stuns people about your story is that you have been, I mean, you are right now doing all of this while still working full-time at your day job. So can you walk us through, you know, your typical work day, how you divide your time between your work, reading, research, your writing work, that other kind of marketing pieces? Where does the time go?
Yeah, and I guess the first answer is there is no typical work day because every day is a little bit different for me. You know, I'd love to be at the point where I can say, okay, I wake up at, you know, 6 a.m., exercise, you know, write for a couple hours, you know, go do something else, you know, sit down and read for an hour, you know, kind of what most copywriters get to do. Unfortunately, I don't get to do that. I don't get to read as much as I'd like to right now. I've got a stack of books from Christmas I haven't gotten through yet. But one of the fortunate things for me is that the job that I work at is not, I'll say, your traditional 8-to-5 job or 9-to-5 job, in that I've got some flexibility in how I put my hours in. So for the most part, you know, I'm told, hey, as long as you get your 40 hours in each week, we don't care when you put them in. I basically do support engineer type of work for a software company. And so I've got certain things I've got to get done each day. I've got other tasks I've got to complete. But if I need to, you know, go into work, let's say from 8 to 10, and then, you know, jump into a side office or out to my car or out to a picnic table to have a client meeting from 10 to 11, you know, I've got the flexibility to do that. So, that's one thing that I certainly credit as an advantage, because I know a lot of people with a full-time job are stuck in a more traditional job where they are, you know, roped into a specific time frame. So I'm lucky in that respect. But for the most part, I will work, you know, my standard, you know, 8 to 4, 8 to 5-ish type of hours at my engineering job, taking hours out, you know, here and there as needed to respond to clients' emails that come in or schedule calls that I need to schedule. So for me, most of my writing and copywriting time is in the evenings and weekends. And for the past 2 years, unfortunately, what that's meant is as I'm building this business, I haven't, you know, had as much time to spend with my wife and kids as possible, as I would like to and as they would like to. You know, it's the sacrifice I've had to make the last couple years as I've been building this. I've told a couple people that since I started this a little over 2 years ago, I've worked some hours every single day, 7 days a week for, I guess, what are we at now, about 28 months and counting. Even when we've been on vacation, you know, when the kids go to bed at night and my wife goes in bed, I'll stay up late and, you know, work a couple hours in a hotel room or something like that. So my typical day will start at about, you know, 6 in the morning or so, and go till midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 in the morning, whatever time I kind of get a little tired, and then sleep several hours and get up and do it again. So most of my writing time typically happens between 6 p.m. and midnight, you know, with little pockets of time throughout the day other than that.
Yeah, well, then you make it work. But, you know, as you talked about, you know, 28 months now working every day, you know, what do you see as the next stage? Are you going to continue that schedule? Are you going to shift into something else? I know I have inside baseball information where I'm like, I know that the quitting of the day job, the keeping of the day job kind of is a back and forth debate. But what do you see as the next step?
And you're right. You have the inside baseball knowledge, because we've talked about this before. And I've had plenty of people ask this question, so I'll kind of give the broader answer. The first question people ask is, well, why haven't you quit your day job yet? And, you know, I'm completely honest with people in that, you know, I've been an engineer for 20 years and I've been a very successful engineer. So, you know, my break-even point is much higher than most other people have to look at. You know, that's what any copywriter who wants to go freelance and quit their day job, they have to look at their individual situation and say, okay, what is my replacement income? You know, what if I have to pay for my own benefits, what is that number going to be? And that number is different for everyone. So, you know, I think a lot of times people that look at me and say, well, why haven't you quit yet? You know, they maybe just don't have that perspective of where I am in terms of a break-even point. So, you know, I've got that number in my head, and it's a number I've spoken about with my clients. And again, fortunately, one of the advantages I have of this job is that, you know, I can actually keep benefits. I pay a higher share for my benefits, but I can keep benefits at my day job even if I cut all the way back to 20 hours a week. So what I'm looking at is basically setting up a transition path where as my retainer income with a client, you know, gets higher and closer to my break-even point, I can basically step back in hours at my day job, even all the way to half-time, still maintain benefits for my wife and kids. You know, health benefits they're difficult for freelancers to sort through because of all the options and the expenses and who knows what the government's going to do and everything else. So, you know, that's one of the main reasons
state
I'm still...
State and family situation to family situation,
yep.
Yes.
Yeah, so all of that I have to consider, and any freelancer has to consider. And so, you know, I'm kind of looking at that process. Now, I've told people, too, that could change tomorrow. In fact, for me, it literally could change tomorrow, because tomorrow I'm having a follow-up conversation with my client to say, okay, what are the next steps in the contract? Because I've got a couple other potential clients asking me for my availability in the months ahead, and I need to know whether they're ready to take that next step and say, okay, we want to make you an exclusive copywriter at such and such a rate. And so, you know, in an ideal world, I could get a number tomorrow that makes me go, okay, I'm quitting, goodbye. You know, if that doesn't happen, then what I'll do is, you know, I'll look and say, okay, well, this number gives me the ability to step back to, you know, 4 days a week or 3 days a week or 20 hours a week and still maintain benefits through my day job and still do this. And so that's the most likely path, is that it'll be a progression over the course of the, you know, the coming months and years, hopefully sooner rather than later. But again, if I got some incredible offer tomorrow, there's nothing saying I couldn't just say, okay, I'm ready to hang up the day job completely. So we'll see.
Yes, well, and I know even a few months, I'll be excited to catch up with you at boot camp and see how things have evolved. So.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure I'll have a lot more to share by then. I mean, even between now and then, I'm going to have another 4 or 5 promotions going out. So I'll have plenty of other results to hang my hat on. I mean, and you write for the financial space as well. And, you know, one of the reasons we write for this space is if you write a blockbuster promotion, you can suddenly be looking at, you know, a six-figure or even high six-figure commission check. And, you know, that has the potential to change a lot of things as well.
Yes, and change them fast. You're like, oh, well, this solves all of these problems and frees up all this time. And the next interview I do with you, it could be from Bora Bora, where you've set up camp.
Yeah, the classic copywriting picture of me with my feet up in a hammock with my laptop on my lap and writing my next promotion.
Yes, and then the part that the classics never touch, which is, why is there no Wi-Fi signal this close to the ocean?
Right.
But anyway, I've tried to write from the beach many times. Sometimes it works, sometimes you just get a lot of sand in your keys. But
yeah, I was going to say, it's funny, laptops don't like sand.
No, they don't. No, they don't. But for newer writers who have yet to really appreciate that sand in the keyboard experience, who may be looking to follow in your footsteps, in terms of doing spec challenges, targeting the financial space, you know, what advice would you have for them?
So I think there are a couple main points, and these are points that chances are most of our listeners have already heard. One of them is where possible, you know, try to pick a niche. You know, in my case, I originally started out looking at B2B copywriting, not because it was what I was interested in, but because, you know, with my background as an engineer, it's probably where I fit best. But the truth is, as I started looking at that, I realized I was going to have to deal with a lot of conflict of interest issues and things that I didn't want to deal with. And I knew I loved investing, which is where I wanted to go anyway. So I said, you know what, even though it may take me longer to get started than starting in an area I know, you know, I'm going to focus on financial because that's where I ultimately want to be. You know, other people may decide to start, you know, where they know. But whatever you want, whatever you do, whichever direction you go, I think you need to pick a niche and be able to focus on that because there are so many potential directions to go in. I'm sure you've been the same places as I've been where sometimes you just get bogged down trying to look at all the information, process it, and make a decision. And, you know, the fewer decisions you have to make, you know, the more effective you can be. You know, I love the story. You know, that's why Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg and those type of people wear the same outfit every day. As they say, if I know I'm wearing the khakis or the jeans and the black T-shirt every day, that's one less decision I have to make, and that means I can mm-hmm. focus on the things that matter. And I think, you know, picking a niche, number one, is that's what it allows you to do, is focus on the things that matter. After that, I think the next thing is to make sure that you're doing things that build your confidence. You know, make sure you're reading a little bit every day and building your knowledge base. Make sure you're writing every day, even if it's, you know, short emails, even if it's old promotions, which is a great place to start. You know, make sure you're advancing your knowledge and your skill set every day and building confidence, because when you go to talk to those clients and especially when you sit down to write that first paid assignment, whether it's an email, whether it's a advertorial, whether it's a full promotion, if you're sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, what do I do now? I've never done this before. It's going to scare the pants off of you. And so you have to have, you know, reached a point where you're confident in your ability to sit down and at least get something on paper or on the screen. And so making sure that you do that, even if it's not submitted to anyone, is a great first step. And then the second step of that is, you know, be willing to take on some of those spec challenges. Now, that's my opinion. I've talked to some writers who are basically like, you should never work for free. And I understand where they're coming from with that perspective, but I believe, especially when you're coming from a place where you don't have a portfolio and you don't have a place to start, that, you know, you can quickly turn a free assignment, you know, into something bigger. You know, as we talked about, I mean, that first spec for Eagle, it was a headline and lead. It was 3 pages, which is what a lot of specs end up being. They end up being shorter pieces, just to mm-hmm. demonstrate that you know how to do research, that you know how to find an idea, that you know how to put those thoughts on paper, and you have the basics of copywriting down. They don't care that particular piece sells them on a product. They just want it's to sell you on your ability to actually do the work. And so I think that's a great first step, even if it is, you know, for no cost. You know, that spec in that case, between the research and the time I spent thinking about it and writing it, it might have been a couple days. You know, it might have been 10 hours that I spent on that. It might have been 20. I honestly don't remember anymore. I think I got the idea for that one pretty quickly. You know, so those were free hours I put in, but that single spec has now been, you know, because every job built and every client built on that very first one that I got and the success I had from that, you know, that single free spec has meant more than $250,000 in income to me in over 2.5 years. So to me, it's certainly worth it if you're willing to sit down and do it.
Yeah, it definitely makes those 10 hours or 20 hours look like time well spent.
Absolutely, and I certainly don't regret it.
No, and nor do many of our other winners. And in fact, just for the benefit of the group, you know, John's been sharing about his experience working with Eagle Financial, and actually in our guest writer series for this month, Elizabeth Blessing includes a sample headline and lead that she wrote for Eagle and some of the feedback and her decisions around that. So you can really see what they're looking for if you would like to do as John did and put in a few hours to try and launch a new stage in your career. So I do hope that everyone listening will also take the time to look at Elizabeth's and to consider this. But John, kind of as we wrap things up, are there any other closing thoughts or career takeaways for the group?
I think the primary one is just to remember that, you know, this being the writer's life or the career you're trying to build or the side income you're trying to build or whatever your objective is with writing, it is your objective. You know, too many times I've seen other people say, well, I'm trying to follow so-and-so's path, or so-and-so told me I should do it this way. People get really hung up. It's because they're trying too hard to follow somebody else's path rather than their own. And what I would say is there are so many people here through PWA, through AWAI, who are more than willing to help you down your own path that you don't have to try to follow somebody else's.
Wonderful advice and just so much good information. Thank you so much for taking the time today and giving me one of your precious hours. It's been a pleasure.